Welcome to the MoCo Conservative Podcast. The MoCo Conservative is located in its namesake of Montgomery County, Maryland. And it was started to fill an obvious void in the DC metro area. There is a clear lack of diversity of thought in Maryland, Washington, DC, and Virginia. And the goal of the MoCo Conservative blog is to provide a voice for the conservative, independent, free-thinking, and most importantly, disenfranchised voter who lives in the DC metro area. The goal of my Facebook page is to provide a sort of one-stop shop for opinions that have been written by local residents and that are published in newspapers in Virginia, DC, and Maryland. And the goal of my podcast is to bring to light or to shed some light on some of the national and local issues directly affecting us. For each podcast episode, I bring a special guest who provides their own unique insight into what is happening across the country and what is happening where they live. And today our guest is Seth Remsnyder, who lives in Clarksburg, Maryland. Seth is a husband, father, and artist, and he's also behind a blog called The Weekly Mourner. Now, the topics that we will be discussing today include, but are certainly not limited to, the failings, the many, many failings of the Democrat Party, including voter fraud, emotional manipulation via programming through the mainstream media, among other topics. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Seth to the podcast. How are you doing tonight, Seth?
Doing great. Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So let's just start. Let's delve into what I wanted to first talk about was your latest blog post. And I know that it was an extensive and very well-written piece about what you have learned so far about voter fraud. So why don't we take it from there?
Absolutely. Happy to. Yeah, so I wrote this piece not to come from the topic of voter fraud or what I'm calling, I'm using a broader term purposefully, election interference. Voter fraud's included in that, in my mind. I wanted to write a piece not from a technical standpoint, but from a rational standpoint and a historically grounded standpoint, where I could say, you know, one of the popular catchphrases right now being used for emotional manipulation on the left is that there's no evidence of widespread voter fraud. And they've created that little phrase, and they'll abandon it soon enough anyway, but they've created it to catch people into thinking that they have to argue on their terms. But you have to, if you're going to argue about voter fraud, you have to prove that it's widespread. And that's baloney. You don't have to prove that voter fraud is widespread for it to be a serious concern, for it to be something that's taken seriously by every single voting American. And furthermore, as Americans, we need to understand that voter fraud per se, while it's very real and has a history in America, isn't the only concern with our election. Election interference in general is a broader concern, and it includes way more things than most people care to imagine. And this piece is trying to present that in a rationally argued way. And like I said, a historically grounded way where I can show people, we not only do we have a nefarious history of this in this country, and I begin the piece by calling people's attention back to the Reconstruction era, where the nation's trying to rebuild after the Civil War. We had ripped each other in pieces, and freed Blacks in the South were being tormented, terrorized, murdered, disenfranchised in numbers that nobody cares to imagine. And voter fraud was a massive problem during Reconstruction. And American Blacks were being disenfranchised left and right. And when we talk about our nation's history and the ills in our nation's history, it's one of the things that I don't think we talk about enough. Our nation has a history of this, and that's my point in saying that. So I highlighted two gentlemen who were among the first freed Blacks in America to hold political office. It was an achievement that I don't know that we'd be able to imagine as well. I mean, a massive achievement for them to overcome the odds that they did in the South, in the Deep South, and hold political office is an incredible achievement. And I wanted to highlight,
when racism was actually prevalent in the area versus right now, where they're trying to make it so. Again, they're trying to recycle what happened in the past I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted
That. You're fine. Mm-hmm. No, it's a good point. And it really does a disservice to the memory of those people who endured those trials, those incredible sufferings and hardships, to compare what contemporary Americans are experiencing. There's still things we need to fix in this country. And obviously, racism is still a real thing. It exists all over the world, including in America. But does it exist at the corrupt and truly systemic way it existed in the Reconstruction South? No, it doesn't exist like that in America today. It's absurd to suggest that it does, especially in light of the incredible legal gains that our country's achieved in this realm. And I felt that highlighting these two gentlemen, Hiram Revels and Josiah T. Walls, would be an opportunity for people to be refreshed on this, that you know, there is evidence of widespread voter fraud in America. It's happened. It's been a part of our history since its beginning. And it has a particularly dark era in our history where it was used to attempt to re-enslave a people who had been enslaved under horrific conditions. And it's difficult for us to imagine that. And when we forget things like that, I think we do ourselves a disservice when we're experiencing things like what we're experiencing now. Because what we're experiencing now is so many steps backwards that it's hard to put it into adequate speech. So that's how I open the piece. And the historical grounding of the piece kind of lies there. And from there, I move to just suggest what I think is happening. And what I think has been happening is that we've been manipulated, lied to, censored, bullied, pressured, fill in the blank, regarding the presidency of Donald Trump. And in my opinion, that whole charade has been an act of election interference. And so I'm grounding the argument in that as well, is that election interference began in late 2015, and it hasn't stopped since. We've been experiencing it every single day in the press, every single day on social media, with every conservative speaking up for the policies that this current president has put forward in support of those policies. There really isn't the sycophancy that the left attempts to allege toward Donald Trump. I know people who support the president. None of them are sycophants. None of them are people who are obsessed with his personality or just fangirling or fanboying over him. They care about the policies he's trying to implement, and they're able to intelligently articulate those policies. And I've been impressed by how many people can and do articulate those policies, and yet they're still attacked, and they're still pressured, and they're still bullied. Instead of having a civil discussion on those matters, they're being called neo-Nazis, they're being called white supremacists, they're being called, what's the other slanderous term?
Conspiracy theorist.
Conspiracy theorist. That's the one I was searching for. And aside from finding that disgusting, I think it is an intentional act of election interference. I think everything has been orchestrated to be an attempt to pull voters away from Donald Trump or to delegitimize the presidency of Donald Trump and to undermine American confidence in the 2016 presidential election. And, you know, I think to a degree, the left has been successful in doing that. And I'm using the left here as a, I know, as a general catchphrase, but I think people know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about 95% of the media apparatus in this country and the press. We're talking about Democrat politicians, people who have real power over our lives. Those are the people I'm referring to when I say the left, talking about activists, paid activists who are being paid to destroy our cities and our towns in the name of fighting what they call fascism. So they're committing fascism to fight fascism. All of that stuff's been done in a hostile way, in a daily way, against people who just intelligently support the policies of this president. And I think that's an act of election interference. And so I go through and I outline how the Russia collusion false narrative was an act of election interference, how the completely fabricated allegation regarding the president of Ukraine and Donald Trump allegedly pressuring him to do something which he didn't do clearly was an act of election interference as well. And the impeachment that resulted from that false allegation in an election year was an act of election interference. And it was done not just by the press that we know and have come to almost accept as a habitual liar to the American people. It was done by the mechanisms of the state. And that should have everybody reeling. And it's kind of trying to refix people's attention on those things because they've been forced down our throats for so long. It's almost like we've gotten used to it. It's like, you know, the people who are now saying that Donald Trump and his supporters are being conspiracy theorists with the 2020 election about how there's voter fraud. And it's like, if that's a conspiracy theory, like, it's like serious child's play compared to what you did to us for right. 4 years.
It's about controlling the narrative.
And it really is.
And yeah. it's so prevalent in every single thing that we see and read and hear that it's very hard for people who are generally more trusting than others, who are not suspicious of anything, to question what they believe to be true. And I think slowly, as I mentioned in I think almost every other podcast episode I've done, slowly people are awakening from the matrix. It's however not enough people are waking up, because it's clear right. that what's happening now, especially with the latest presidential election, the media is setting those people up on the left who are now celebrating. They're setting them up to, I think, have a total mental breakdown, like a total psychological breakdown.
Because I agree.
To happen in just a few weeks or days, people, world, is that President Trump is going to officially win the election by electoral votes, and probably by the official popular votes as well. And what's happening is that he will be painted as a tyrant, as basically Hitler 2.0. And
well, what else is new?
Yeah, exactly.
What else is new?
But they're just going to get even more and more crazy.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what I would think that the majority of people here need to prepare for the riots and the complete destruction of property. I hope it's not going to go to that, that place that I'm thinking will happen. But I mean, businesses are boarding up in Bethesda. I mean, that's how close it is to people in the suburbs in Montgomery County, not to mention all over the country.
I'm extremely concerned about that too. And I think that that's another act of election interference. Just the hovering threat of violence and destruction that the left has tacitly approved as a tactic to intimidate Americans with. To me, it's one of the most sad and disgusting things to see cities, great American cities, boarding up shops because they know if a president is duly elected again, that people will resort to violence and destructive activity because they've been engineered to, or because they're being paid to. That's disgusting. And it is election interference. It's intimidation. It's an act of voter suppression. And the people who tacitly approve this stuff in the press, especially, in my opinion, they have both blood and destruction on their hands because they've essentially given the okay for this kind of thing to happen. And they've been nowhere near as outspoken about those kinds of things as they have about Donald Trump. So they'll take a phone call from Donald Trump and they will turn it into the century's deepest, ugliest scandal when it's not. And they'll cover that wall to wall for 24 hours. They'll write articles about it. They'll evaluate it. They'll create whole podcasts about it. They'll be rewarded with podcasts for how aggressively they slander the president.
I mean, it becomes basically an echo chamber on their part.
Oh, they're living 100% in Truman's world. They're in a total bubble. They're completely on their own amongst themselves, but they have half of America that they're manipulating. And I hold them accountable for it because they have not spoken out against rioting and violence in any way nearly as aggressively or with any kind of similar moral force or ethical fortitude that they have about a phone call from Donald Trump, where he clearly didn't coerce somebody. And the president even went on record of Ukraine saying there was no pressure in that phone call. I was not coerced. I didn't even know that money was delayed. And it was $400 million compared to $1 billion that Joe Biden threatened him with to his face when he was vice president, a different president of Ukraine, but threatened him nonetheless to cover over his disgustingly corrupt son who had created a pay for access scheme with the vice presidency of the United States. They didn't care about that at all. And in fact, they censored people for sharing that story. I was one of them. I had a couple tweets struck down because of that. And I was putting out information that was true, that was backed with evidence. And yet they don't have the ethical fortitude to speak out against this hovering threat of riots, to not front page cover that and say, hey, don't riot. Don't burn your neighbor's things. Don't burn down your neighbor's small business. Don't murder somebody in the street, David Dorn. You know, well, don't shoot retired police officers.
I've got news for you. They want it to happen. They want chaos, yeah. And it's very hard for decent people to understand the reasoning behind this rhetoric, because there is no reasoning. It's basically, let's create chaos, let's create death, let's create destruction. Let's basically just embrace the whole Democrat Party agenda right now. Death, destruction, and complete social manipulation of the masses, really.
That's the reason, is to get them to embrace this agenda and to pressure people into it. And again, it breaks my heart to say that. And I really don't enjoy saying something like that, that is such a sweeping statement about the media and the press, but it's true. And I wouldn't say it if I wasn't convinced that it was true. And I wouldn't say it if I hadn't personally confronted it in people that I know, where they're saying these kinds of things about people that they don't even know and drawing these judgments and conclusions about them when they have absolutely no right to do so, no evidence to do so. There's nothing civil about it. There's nothing okay about it. And they just let it happen and they don't speak out against it. And I hold them responsible for that. And I think Americans are starting to hold them more and more responsible for that. We're seeing that in their ratings crash. Their readership is crashing. And thank God for it. I hope it crashes completely. And I hope they're all out of jobs sooner rather than later. I really do. And I hate to say stuff like that. I hate to think that way about my neighbors and my fellow countrymen, but when you're publishing in the New York Times or Washington Post or on whatever internet news outlet that you're a part of, that your next door neighbor is a neo-Nazi because he has a Trump sign in his front yard. You know, I've got all the expletives in the world for people like that. There's no place for that in American dialogue. And yet here we are. Here we are. Yeah, so politics is a dirty sport.
Yeah.
It's a dirty sport. Everybody knows it's a dirty sport. This is next level. This is Hitlerian. This is fascism. To do that kind of thing to your neighbor. It's fascism. It's what it is. You're trying to silence them. You are trying to manipulate them, and you're trying to use the state to do it. That's real. So
you're
I'm sorry. You go ahead.
No, that's totally fine. It's all about control at the end of the day. If they feel they being basically almost every person in power, and I'm not just talking about the Democrats as well. There are many Republicans who are just in this. They're also extremely corrupt. And they allow it to happen. They're not going to fight back. They're not going to fight for the people because they're in on it as well. And it's not just the publications and the newspapers that you're talking about. I mean, there is a Frederick County council member and state senator who has called Republicans Nazis. This is a local member of the community who has called Republicans Nazis, who did not apologize. These are his constituents. This is Kai Hagan.
Well, I'll look him up. I didn't know about that. I'll look him up.
Oh yeah, that's heinous. Within the last year, I think.
That's heinous. That's just
yeah.
Oh, and then you the have irresponsibility.
Actual, yeah, and then you have actual like communists, like Elrich, Commandant Mark Elrich here, the county council executive of Montgomery County, and the entire council, who have completely taken over.
They're awful.
Their legislation, almost every single piece of their legislation is horrendous. And there are so many people who continue to vote for them and believe in the legislation and believe in paying even higher taxes. And guess what? People are leaving. The people who are most affected are the very ones that they claim to want to support and get out of their, you know, little bubble of poverty, right? And it's all about equity, right?
We've been hearing that a lot lately too.
Buzzword. Equity is the new buzzword.
It is the new buzzword. Yeah, it is. And the council is completely insane, and they are a bunch of petty tyrants. And I think the only thing I can say to that is that the people of Montgomery County, they need to wake up, and it is well within our power to throw those bums out. And that's what we need to do. We need to get the word out. We need to do it at a grassroots level. And it needs to happen sooner rather than later. That's the only solution we have to this is we got to come together and we got to change Montgomery County, and person by person, it's got to happen. That's the only thing I know to say to that. I mean, it's like, you know, we have power at a local level. I think I still believe that in America, local politics is probably the most important kind of politics in this country. Mm-hmm. And the more that we can focus on that and work together to change that, I think the better outcomes we're going to have at the national level too. And I think it's going to work its way up. I believe that firmly, because that's, you know, part of the cynicism in politics comes from in Americans, in everyday Americans who are just jaded and burned out and tired of hearing about politics. Part of that cynicism comes from a lack of activism at the local level, a lack of engagement. They're not engaged at the local level. They don't go to HOA meetings. They just let it happen to them. They don't go to their school board meetings. They just let it happen to them and their children. They don't go to sit in on Montgomery County Council meetings. They just let it happen. And the council drops new tyrannical orders whenever they want, and they do it in perpetuity, and nobody does a thing about it because people are used to just letting it happen. And that breeds cynicism in national politics as well, because you're even less connected to that. You have less of an ability to be in touch with that. You can't go sit in on a session of Congress in DC. It's really hard to do that. I mean, for everyday working Americans, that's nearly impossible, right? Who has time to go do that? The access to that is limited. You feel disconnected from it. People are talking about broader issues. If we started to see change at a local level, it would give us confidence in what's happening at the national level or at the state level. Mm-hmm. And that type of change at the local level, it's at our fingertips. It's right there. Like we control that. We really do.
Well, you know, so, I think in Montgomery County, especially, the Democrat machine is so entrenched in, I don't even know how to explain this, in the entire populace here. And I'll give you one example. It was an uphill battle for Question D. That was 9 districts for MoCo.
And right. Yeah.
It was bipartisan. And because of that, I mean, you know, the founder of the movement, she is a Black Biden supporter. Okay. And she had the help of many in the GOP. That almost the entire Democrat leadership refused to help her. Now, why would that be? Let's think. That's because they're all in power. all they had to do was spend about $100,000 almost at the last minute with signs, with advertisements, commercials, and it passed. And you know, why don't we talk about election interference? What I've seen,
let's do that. Yeah.
When it comes to 90 in particular, what I saw when looking at the tallies for the votes, it was clear for every single Democrat supported ballot initiative that they single-handedly won with mail-in voting. On election day, they did not win. So what does that mean? I could always speculate. I don't think it's a coincidence because that's been happening all over the country. But there's only so much I can say. I just found it very, very interesting and odd that is how they won. They won by mail-in voting.
Yeah.
And guess who else is claiming to have won by mail-in voting on the national level? You know, it happens everywhere, and it's disheartening and a little depressing to just try to mention this to just an average person who lives in Montgomery County. They have a very hard time believing that it's possible. I mean,
and
fraud and interference at international level, you know, Russia, China.
Yeah.
It's just very nebulous, I think.
Well, and this is a part of what this discussion is about. It's that people are being trained largely through social media, but absolutely through the media and the press for those people who still engage in cable news networks. They're being trained to think of things as just left or right, Republican or Democrat. They're not thinking, I live in Montgomery County. What's best for Montgomery County? Maybe it isn't a left or right issue. Maybe it's a financial issue. Maybe it's an economic issue. Maybe it's just a community level issue. What does this ballot question have to do with me? How's it going to affect my life? There were folks, you know, at the proper distance outside of the polling place that I went to. I went to vote in person on election day. A Republican there kindly gave me a Republican ballot sheet. And I had studied the questions to the best of my ability, and I felt that I understood them. There were, you know, some of the judges, I couldn't get details. I couldn't find them anywhere. So I didn't really know who to vote for. So the sheet was helpful for that. But these ballot questions, I don't even know if it said the judges on the sheet, actually. It may not have.
I think it did. It did.
Yeah,
it had the incumbents for the judges.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
One who, she was very, very progressive, and she, for some reason, attended or received money or sent money to some Republican, some GOP, either fundraiser or event. And a lot of Republicans thought that they should be voting for her. So it was a very,
it's wild,
very convoluted issue, but go on.
But the point of that is, you know, it was helpful and I was grateful that they were there doing that. But there's another sense in which that's kind of a part of the problem, because I'm a Republican. I think for most Republicans in Montgomery County, they're going to go in there and that sheet's going to be a godsend to them. It's going to be like, okay, thanks for this, because I hadn't really had time to think about these ballot questions. I didn't even know these ballot questions were on the ballot. So this is cool. Thank you for doing this. But that's a little bit a part of the problem. They should know. They should know what these issues are. We should know what they are. We should know how they're going to affect our lives. We should be able to answer from both an ethical and a pragmatic basis as to whether we want expanded gaming in Montgomery County. Do we? I don't want a poor tax in Montgomery County. I don't want that trash here. We don't need it here. We've never needed it here. And we can look at other communities where it exists and see the particular people who it affects. We know who it affects. There's been studies done on this for decades, so we know. But we're not in tune enough to be able to adequately answer that question. Come on, you know? And I know Democrats who feel the same. So, but they're going to vote down ballot for the Democrat issues, and Republicans are going to vote down ballot for the Republican issues. And largely, with the exception of these in the national election, with the exception of these dying urban areas that that we're supposed to believe Joe Biden outperformed Barack Obama, 2008 Barack Obama in, what a farce that is. We're supposed to believe that close to 10,000 people in some of those communities, or I'm sorry, close to 100,000 people in some of those areas didn't vote down ballot. We're supposed to believe that they just voted for Biden. That's it. And they didn't follow the rest of their ticket. No, this is what people do. People follow the ticket. This is what Americans in 2020 do. We go down ballot. I'll check all the Republican boxes because that's what someone told me to do. And my Democrat friends will check all the Democrat boxes because that's what someone told them to do. And since we're outnumbered here, we're never going to change Montgomery County until people start thinking about it more deeply than that. And that's why I knock the Republican thing a little bit too, because I think we can do better than that. I think we can get in more extensive conversations about these issues with people who disagree with us politically and work to get back to a place where it isn't just party lines. We have to think outside of that box. I don't mind party lines. I don't mind being called a Republican. I don't mind my friends wanting to call themselves Democrats. I don't mind that at all. I'm talking about our local communities and how we think about that. And if we can start to get a hold of that, I think we'll make some change. We'll make some real and lasting change. But until we do that, yeah, we're going to have expanded gaming, garbage like that. We're going to have things that the Montgomery County Council wants to foist on us, and we're going to have to eat crow for as long as they're in power. We're going to take control of that. Are we going to let our kids grow up in that kind of community?
Well, I guess so. It can't be recalled. So what I propose, and what I heard on another call that I was on, is maybe the next ballot initiative should be to get the recall option.
The legislation
for the county to be able to recall the county executive and the entire council, because guess what? You can't recall them. The only way to get them out of office, and as opposed to voting them out, is to get them arrested.
They're dug in there like the little ticks that they are. They really are. And it's frustrating. And so one of the ballot questions, if I'm not mistaken, served to increase their power.
Ballot question P, which,
there you go.
Councilmember Evan Glass proposed and got voted on at the very last minute at the 11th hour. And it was meant to confuse and
It really was confusing. It really was.
But to also increase their power, should they choose to implement it, they have the option to not move forward with it. I highly doubt I highly doubt that they won't go forward with it
because they can't resist. They can't resist, and now nothing can stop them. So,
and then the opposition, there's a blog called The Seventh State, which is headed by a former, I think, a staffer of Hans Reimer, who's also a current council member. And what they wrote, trying to fearmonger the Democrats, you know, the liberals who would obviously be voting for question C, is if question D passes, a Republican is going to get on the county council. First of all, no. When was the last time a registered Republican ran for office and got in on the county council? Tell me. I don't know. It's been a while. Second, I doubt that even a moderate Democrat can even make it now. They have to be approved by the county council. And the county council are a bunch of radical, progressive, communists who are masquerading behind the Democrat Party. And that's literally almost every single Democrat on every level around the country.
Well, that contingent has grown so fast that it really does feel like it's almost all of them. And, you know, I know it's not.
Well, but they've been ousted. The ones who are moderate Democrats, compromise and who want to debate, they
tarred
are not given a voice. They're completely
tarred and feathered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And at the national level, Trump was used to carry out that kind of persecution on them, which is insane to me, because one of the first things he did when he was elected was come to the table to work with Democrats on immigration policy. It's one of the first things he did. He came to them and offered them a genuine offer of amnesty, total amnesty for DACA recipients in exchange for increased border security and money for a border wall. Totally fair exchange. If you care at all about children being trafficked across our southern border, little girls being raped as they're being trafficked across our southern border, you know, it makes me want to slap the people I hear talking about kids in cages. You know, they're safer in a fenced-in pen than they were on the journey there, where they were being raped by the coyotes that were trafficking them here, that you like to call their parents as a form of propaganda. That's insane. This president came right to the table with that. That was one of the first things he did. And they rejected him because they had already created such an extremist narrative about him that they couldn't turn away from it. How can you come to the table with a Nazi? How can you come to the table with an orange Nazi? It's even worse. Look at the color of his skin.
Yeah, and he's such a fascist.
It's a sickness.
The Washington Post still miraculously is able to stay in circulation and publish all of these articles calling him all of these names. I'm surprised that they all haven't been sent to a gulag and persecuted.
You could have had the exact policy that you wanted in place in exchange for security that we need, and that when Democrats are in power, they admit they need, and you rejected it so that you could slander a guy and so you could slander his supporters. That's insane. It's insanity.
They didn't want solutions. They wanted to extend and exacerbate the problems, but under the radar.
Right. And all the slander that trickled down to people who supported him or entertained the idea of working with him and coming to the table with him. I mean, it fit every single category. Christians were attacked and manipulated for supporting him, and still are. There was just absolutely no quarter for people who wanted to accomplish something in a bipartisan way with this president. And they did that out of anger, spite, and lust for power. And there's no question about it. And they did it to such a degree that it quite literally was one of the most egregious forms of election interference that we can imagine. It really was an attempted coup, and still is to this very moment. I believe that 100%. As I was saying before, it's insane it's insane. You have to be a fool to believe that Joe Biden, who is so obviously suffering from early onset dementia, who did no campaigning. I mean, this was the most absentee candidate I've ever seen. I've been following politics for a little while now, and he did nothing on the campaign trail. Kamala Harris didn't even campaign that much. And we're expected to believe that he just massively outperformed Barack Obama in Milwaukee, in Detroit, in Philadelphia. They're not going to give us credit, but we're not stupid. And if you believe that, you are. And it's absurd to me. It's just like, I just can't get my head around that one. It's like, you know, I was reading an article today. I'm working on part two of the securing our vote article, part two, where the director of Big Data Poll, a guy named Rich Barris, was remarking on the phenomenon that was Joe Biden's performance in these dying areas. I mean, Philadelphia is a dying area, Milwaukee is a dying area, Detroit's a dying area. These are not areas that are experiencing population increase. That's being said right now. It's being said population increases. To how did Joe Biden get, what is it, 73 or 75 million votes? Is that saying how much he got? Like, he didn't get,
I think it was 76.
76? Okay. He didn't, first of all, he didn't get 76 million votes. Absolutely no. He did not. Mail-in voting did not increase turnout so much that he got 76 million votes, and that these insanely massive numbers came out of these dying areas. That didn't happen. Okay, this is election interference and a combination of voter fraud taking place right before our very eyes. You're a fool if you believe it's not. That didn't happen. But this pollster was saying the calling ahead of the election was not that he was going to overperform in these urban areas. In fact, the polling was saying he was going to swing pivot counties. He was going to flip them. He was going to flip pivot counties all over the country. These are countries that Barack Obama creamed John McCain in 2008 and also smashed Mitt Romney in 2012. Not as badly. He lost, what, like 4 million votes between 2008 and 2012. But that's not what they were polling. The pollsters weren't saying that Joe Biden's going to crush in Milwaukee and Philadelphia and Detroit and wherever else this is happening. They weren't saying that. They were saying he's going to flip pivot counties. They were saying it's going to be the kind of landslide, you know, these 16-point leads that we were being told about, 6-point leads in Florida. Are you joking? You're joking, right? No, they weren't joking. That's what they were really polling. That's what we were really supposed to believe, these polls, that Biden's ahead by 6 points in Florida in the week of the election, and they herded to 3%. Then he's ahead by 3%, like the day before or whatever it was. But we're supposed to believe all that. But that's not what happened is not what the pollsters said was going to happen. What happened was the opposite of that.
Again,
Trump made gains
exactly
from what he did in 2016. If you look at the maps, you can see he won the same counties and he actually won some new ones in those pivot counties. Mm-hmm. Or he held his ground. He might have lost one or two, three or four. He didn't lose nearly enough for it to be anything close to flipping. And where this election turned was between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. on election night in these major urban areas. That's when it turned. It turned in Philadelphia then, and they stopped counting. It turned in and put everybody in the dark. It turned in Milwaukee. It turned in Detroit. In the counties surrounding, everybody knew that, number one, it wasn't going to be a landslide for Joe Biden. And nobody predicted that it was going to come out of these areas that it allegedly is coming out of now. Nobody called for that. Nobody. And and yet we're supposed to believe. Like
I mean, there's no
mail-in ballot. No.
Yeah, there's no way for me to prove that Trump won and won the popular vote in 2016, but I believe he won the popular vote back then too. It's just,
I think it's a high, it's a high likelihood that he did, and that the same kind of corruption was at play back then.
Just not.
I think there was I think there was a lot more arrogance back then. I think that everyone just thought it's over. It's a clean sweep. There's no way he's going to beat Hillary Clinton. The guy, they were already hard at work painting him out to be a total buffoon. And yeah, obviously Trump can put his foot in his own mouth better than most of us. He's great at doing that. He's also been absolutely great at being president. He's been phenomenal. The stuff that he's accomplished under the adversity he's accomplished and the people he's accomplished it for has flown in the face of everything that was predicted about him. It's flown in the face of all the worst things that have been said about him. What he did for minority job numbers, minority prosperity across the board is nothing short of a miracle for what he has been up against.
In him basically getting the minority majority votes.
Yeah, he almost won Miami-Dade. Come on, give me a break. And we're supposed, so he almost wins Miami-Dade in Florida, and we're supposed to believe Detroit did what Detroit did late on election night, or Philadelphia. They're like, no, these are dead areas. Miami-Dade is not a dead area. That's an area where there's population growth happening. That's an area where people are still moving to.
Well, Florida is also very good at counting their votes properly.
They cleaned up their act big time. So there was, there was. And maybe that makes our point. Two of the key corrupt players in Florida, I think one got arrested. I don't remember their names off the top of my head. One of them got arrested. These are Broward County, I think, people. Maybe one's Broward County, one's Miami-Dade. And they had this sort of dual thing going where everyone knew that voter fraud and election interference were happening in those counties.
Yep.
And one of them, I think, was forced to resign, and the other was arrested, if I'm not mistaken. And Florida cleaned up that corruption, and Trump almost won Miami-Dade. Maybe he did win Miami-Dade. Maybe there's still some lingering effects of that corruption. He came so close that, and the gains that he made in minority communities from 2016 is so large that it does not stand to reason that these few key dying areas that they needed to swing this election that they didn't know they needed until after the polls had closed ended up coming through for him between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. It's just insane. It's beyond belief. Another thing I was going to mention about this big data poll guy is he referenced a 2016 BBC article where the BBC said it was doing a kind of a survey and an article on election interference and voter fraud based on an African nation that had experienced vast amounts of election interference and voter fraud. And so it's a very simple, easy to read article, very well written, outlining telltale signs of voter fraud and election interference. Let me pull it up and I'll read you some. Okay, I'm going to pull it up. it's a phenomenal article. I'll give you one. If I can pull it up quickly, it's bookmarked on my phone. I don't think it's bookmarked on my pad. So. Let me see here if I can get it. All right. BBC. This will blow your mind. Vote rigging.
I said it's coming from the BBC, but go on.
Oh no, it's it. Yeah, it's just the irony. The irony is so delicious. Vote rigging, how to spot the telltale signs. Here we go, from the BBC in September of 2016. Too many voters, first category. Too many voters. Watch the turnout figures. They can be a big giveaway. You never get a 98% or a 99% like we did in Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
We got this in Wisconsin. I think they said it was 96% or 97% in Wisconsin,
And to my listeners, I will make sure to link this, add this link.
Please do. Yeah, please do link this. That's approaching and exceeding mandatory vote levels of turnout in countries where they actually enforce mandatory turnout. Some countries have it, but they don't enforce it. I think Australia has it and they enforce it.
Not improbable. It is impossible.
It's impossible. Yes. It's statistically impossible. It cannot happen. It didn't happen. Let's just be clear about that. You never get a 98% turnout in an honest election. You just don't. Voting's compulsory in Gabon. This is the nation, but it's not enforced. Even in Australia, where it is enforced, where you can vote by post or online and can be fined for not voting, turnout only reaches 90 to 95%. That's shocking. That's a shocking. Okay, let's move on. A high turnout in specific areas. I mean, are you following this? A high turnout in specific areas. What do we need here? We need something in Wisconsin. We need something in Michigan. We need something in Pennsylvania. That's a swing state. And we need something in Georgia, Atlanta. There we go. Atlanta, Fulton County, corrupt as they come. Las Vegas, Nevada, corrupt as they come. We have a residency scheme in Nevada, right? Okay. High turnout in specific areas. Even where the turnout is within the bounds of possibility, if the figure is wildly different from the turnout elsewhere, it serves as a warning. All right, are we taking warning now? Are we taking warning yet? Because the turnout in those locations was so much higher than everywhere else in the nation that we ought to be, right? We ought to be. Let's look at the next one. Large numbers of invalid votes.
Yes.
Like, you can't make this stuff up. This is from 2016. Keep an eye on the number of votes excluded as invalid. Even in countries with low literacy rates, this isn't normally above 5%. What do you want to bet? It's well above 5% here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is basically the same people who kept hammering the world and the country about Russia, Russia, Russia collusion and election interference are now magically they have decided and completely refused to acknowledge the fact that there could be any other collusion or election interference this time. It's hypocrisy. Yeah. And I think that's the overarching theme of
tonight's
episode is just the sheer hypocrisy of not only the Democrat machine and mainstream media, but everybody who follows their agenda. And I don't want to end this podcast on another depressing note. What I wanted to do was to maybe ask you, Seth, how can normal everyday people who have a family, who have a job, who have to take care of so many different things in their just day-to-day life, how can they make a difference and make a change in, especially with what is happening today? How would you?
That's an awesome question.
Yeah.
That's an awesome question. I'm really glad you asked that. And I applaud you for ending this knot, because everything right now seems to be ending on a depressing note. It's like, this is such an uphill climb, right? The immediate results that we're hoping to achieve is such an uphill climb. For this to be litigated is such an uphill climb, and it's so difficult to prove voter fraud. And this is another thing I'd like to slap the people that say there's no widespread evidence of voter fraud in the face with, is that it's really hard to catch it, and that's why there's no widespread evidence for it. It's extremely difficult to catch it. And when it's successful, it means you haven't caught it. Okay, so your whole saying's a non sequitur as it is. It's just a ridiculous, it's an inane statement to make. But this all feels so depressing, and it feels like, man, we know Trump won. We know he did. There's no question about it. We are rebounding from the economic destruction that was caused by the forced lockdowns from COVID. People are getting back on their feet. It's happening all around us. It's happening in my own life. I'm seeing it happening in people's lives that I know. I know it's real. That is uplifting to see. I know that people in this election didn't miss that point, but this still feels like an uphill climb. So I applaud you for asking that. I think that's a great way to end this. And I had a conversation with a good buddy of mine where we were both saying, like, you know, it does seem like an uphill climb. So what's it mean for us? Because I think for the first time in our lives, we've gotten to witness the American government, at least from the executive branch, working in the way that we hope it will work. Not perfectly, but some of the things that we talked about in this podcast are really, really phenomenal accomplishments. What the Trump administration has been able to accomplish in the Middle East is nothing short of incredible. It's remarkable, I should say. The Abraham Accords, bringing the normalization of relations between Israel and nations that have thrived on hating Israel, is remarkable. It's miraculous. I think it's three nations now have signed on, right? Is that right? Three nations. There's
Bahrain and Sudan.
Right. And there's several that are looking to sign on. They landed their first flight in the UAE, correct? Right. So you see people who were Muslim Arabs and Jewish people getting off of this plane, waving their flags together, arms around each other. It's an incredible sight. I teared up a little bit because this is something that even since I was in like high school, I thought of as like, oh, that's the unachievable thing, right?
Well, peace in the Middle East. And also the Kosovo peace agreement where
incredible. Yeah, incredible.
It's showing that, you know, I don't remember who said it. It may have been Reagan, but it's the economy stupid. Or was it Bush? It's the economy stupid.
That was Reagan. Yeah, that was Reagan.
Good.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It's the economy stupid.
Yeah.
And it literally is. When you provide, especially I think with the Kosovo peace agreement, what they were mentioning was there were literal economic hurdles that were put in place between the two countries that just prevented them from working together. Like
it created a common goal.
There were economic roadblocks which caused cultural and societal roadblocks, and but these are basically business deals and politicians.
This is another this is another aspect of the election interference, is just that the press decided not to cover that. And cable news networks decided not to cover that. That is a lifetime accomplishment. And they decided we're not going to cover it. Well, screw you guys. Like, what about those people that have been the recipients of death and destruction and despair for how many years now? I mean, just, we can't even count them. And here we have the opportunity for real lasting peace. And the foundation for that to endure the kind of assault that people who are bad actors want to bring to them. And you're not going to cover it? That makes me sick to my stomach. You know, don't ever preach to me about anything ethical ever again. You know, anyway, I digress. But seeing those kinds of things, it really did uplift us. And that's going to stick with me. I'm never going to forget what he was able to accomplish with the economy. You know, nobody thought manufacturing jobs were going to come back to the United States. And lo and behold, of all people on planet Earth to do it, Donald Trump did it. And, you know, I'm never going to forget that. And I'm never going to forget what happened in the Middle East. I'm never going to forget the stand he took for the pro-life movement in America. He took an unprecedented stand for us. I consider myself to be a part of that movement. I'm never going to forget that. I'm never going to forget the ways that he approached it. He approached it intelligently and he accomplished a lot. And as I was discussing that with this friend, we kind of said, you know what? I think we're kind of reviewing what we thought were the good things about this, you know, and if this period of time is over, those are really, really good building blocks. Those are really strong building blocks. And we got a fight on our hands for sure, because people just want to undo it just to undo it. They want to undo it. A guy like Joe Biden wants to undo it so he can continue to enrich himself and his family. That's what he's about. That's what he's proven he's about as a politician. It's not been about the American people. He's been about enriching his own life. It's a selfish motive. And that's what Joe Biden is. That's also what Kamala Harris is. She's been about gaining power and enriching herself. So we do have a fight on our hands against bad actors who really do have bad motives for using the mechanisms of American power. But we also have really good building blocks to build off of. And what those kinds of things show me is that, okay, I'm going to make a much smaller contribution likely than that, but I can make one. You know, if the impossible guy, the orange man, came along and made these accomplishments, then I think I can get in the fight, you know, and I think I can make a difference.
What President Trump has done, he has kickstarted, or he has become a catalyst for a movement that whatever happens with this election, it will not end. And that is something that even the mainstream media has had to acknowledge. And they've been, I would say, they've been psychotic when it comes
to sociopathic, right?
They are programming the radicals to call us, think of us as maggots and morons. And I have proof of this. I'm happy to add a link to a
video. Do it. Yeah, add the links. Please do.
Burn the Republican Party down to the ground. To make lists of Trump supporters.
Yeah.
If that's not fascism,
please, I don't know what is.
What is fascism?
I don't know what is.
So I would say on a closing note, to help uplift people, what this podcast episode has done, in addition to all the other ones and the blog and everybody who has listened, is that you have started to educate yourself more, and you are breaking free from, I hate to say the Matrix, but I'm going to say it. You're breaking free from this program, Matrix,
and
just continue on fighting for the truth, because that is something that can never be taken away from you once you wake the HE double hockey sticks up.
Amen. May I add one more thing?
Yes, please.
Because that, you know, that's a general, and that's certainly the first thing, is I would say we need to keep in mind the accomplishments, because they've been beautiful, and they've been beautiful for all kinds of Americans. And we need to keep those things in mind and keep striving after them. Even if we lose them for a little bit, we can get them back. You know, Donald Trump proved that we can get good things back. So people can't lose heart for that. But the second thing I'd say is, you know, what you ask yourself, what is it in your own little world, that you have some kind of influence over? And the friend I was speaking with, he's an art professor, and he's a brilliant art historian. He's a brilliant artist. His work is phenomenal. And he's in the heart of the Citadel, of the neo-Marxist matrix, as you like to call it. I mean, that pervades the art world today in America. And he has an opportunity to influence people to embrace their individual liberty in a creative way that doesn't involve conservative mantras. It doesn't involve party affiliation. Artists think outside of those boxes anyway. And, you know, I'd suggest to anyone listening, find what those specific areas are for you, and get to work making whatever contribution you can in whatever creative way you can, because really it's on us to rebuild our culture. And I really do think that we have a lot to offer our neighbors when it comes to just the blessing that individual liberty is. We have a lot of ideas to offer. We've been given, as you said, an enormous kickstart by this highly unlikely figure, Donald Trump. He's given us so much to work with. So that's the other way I'd say it, is figure out at your own level, with your family, with your friends. You know, they know your gifting. They know how you're bent, what you're bent towards, and think about it and put fear aside, and consider what you can do. That's what I would say. So,
well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And on that note, again, I want to thank Seth Remsnyder for joining us tonight. This is the MoCo Conservative signing off. And until next time, we will talk to you all soon. Have a good night.